Thank you. Welcome. This is my church in Lethbridge, Alberta. I have a very interesting, I had a hard time making my name tag because I am a pastor full-time of First Baptist Lethbridge, which you see here, a very churchy church in a university town. I also, my background is in geography and I teach physical geography at an introductory level with three different Christian colleges online. So I sort of walk this interesting world between faith and science on a regular basis with students, both within my own congregation and also in various different institutions. About 3 years ago, I began to be more and more aware of a tension that scientists have sometimes in congregations, or more appropriately, not in congregations. And had a grant from the Louisville Institute to interview scientists who are Christians. You always have to be careful saying Christian scientists, because that has some other implications. And whether or not they actually connect with congregations. And what I discovered was that, which way goes where here? Down button works better. There are scientists in church. These are the four questions we're going to look at, but I'll just work through them, so I won't necessarily pause there. Many scientists are, many are not. There's a wonderful book by Elaine Howard Eklund who looked at research scientists at several of the major institutions in the United States and how many connect or how many had faith and how many didn't. But she never asked the question, which was interesting, if you have faith as a scientist, do you actually connect with the church? And that is a question that I found is a little tricky for some people to answer. There are some scientists at church. I interviewed over 40, none of them working in Christian institutions. So these were scientists working in either public universities or in business or research, et cetera, and other places. And what they loved about church, and in many cases, was the sense of community that they found. I heard a lot about small groups and how valuable small groups were to people. Some of them really were encouraged by their churches, which was fantastic. One scientist talked about how his pastor would come to his lab and they'd go for coffee and the pastor would ask him about his research, didn't have a clue what he was talking about, but he just appreciated the fact that the pastor would actually listen, which was interesting. And when I sort of, after I'd heard that, I asked other scientists, did that happen in your experience? And it was incredibly rare to hear of anyone who did that, which was kind of interesting. Opportunity. Some scientists actually had opportunity to talk about their research in their church environment, which was kind of interesting. So a hydrologist was asked to talk about water conservation over a lunch. One of the things that we did in our church is we have a chemistry professor who I get to do children's stories because she can do cool erupting volcanoes and this thing called elephant toothpaste with peroxide and water that I don't dare do because I'd blow things up, but she can do it safely. So some wonderful things like that. And a broader perspective, one scientist said, church reminds me that biology is not the only thing in life. And I appreciated that. One of the questions then is, are churches aware that there are scientists in their congregations? And I spoke with leadership in 24 different congregations. Less than 50% ever thought about the fact that they did or didn't, and none of them really thought about how they could possibly engage them in a meaningful way, which was interesting. Most knew that they had young adults, YAs is young adults, interested in science. You can tell the pastor who's used to PowerPoint screens much smaller. I use a really big font and less words, but four pastors actually discouraged young adults from going into science because they felt it would be threatening to their faith, which is the reality, right? Only two intentionally engaged science in any meaningful way, and none encouraged mentors for, that's supposed to be for young adults. So one of the things that I'll say in my conclusion is if you have young adults or know young adults who are Christian, who are interested in science, try and find mentors for them because it can be a very hard and lonely and sometimes discouraging path. So the next question, are churches sensitive to challenges that scientists might have? And the reality is not most are, but I'm preaching to the converted here because many of you are scientists or actively engaged. So you could be my study group. But there are challenges that scientists have at work. One biology professor said that basically I spend my whole week defending my faith. And then, related to the second point B, the last thing I want to do is have to come and defend my life on Sunday morning. And this biologist told of a story where one person in the congregation would corner him at coffee on Sunday morning and say, "Aha, I gotcha," because he'd been doing some scoping on the internet on certain sites the night before and felt that he had the definitive answer to destroy his perspectives as a biologist on evolution, etc. And he said, "I don't need to come to church and have to deal with that when I spend all week dealing with people who are attacking my faith in the secular university environment." And some of you have had that experience, I'm sure. What's interesting then are also some of the theological challenges that scientists go through, and I'm sure we've talked about some of those as we have met this morning. And over the last couple of days, a couple of them that I find are interesting is that most scientists had thought through these things very thoughtfully and were very aware of the issues in their discipline that cause tension with their faith. This related to authority as well, which is the good old theological word for where do we find authority? And many of us would say, well, the Bible is our source of truth for all matters of faith and conduct. But again, as we've wrestled the last couple of days, it's how we interpret the Bible that is often challenging. And as someone who, again, has tried to balance these worlds for a few years, what I found really encouraging was how thoughtful most scientists were about how Scripture, again, related to their discipline. And I heard Psalm 19:1, "The heavens declare the glory of God," time and time again from all sorts of people, which was actually really refreshing that they deliberately made those connections between Scripture and their experience of how they acted in the lab and lived out their faith in their professional life as well. The interesting one then for me are, the question is, what are the potential and possibilities of having scientists in church? And this is where, for those churches that wrestled with things and were discouraging, it was kind of unfortunate because there's a loss that comes with that. But one of the things that we have found in our own congregation, and I found that the churches that were actually aware of some of the challenges that scientists might have, it forced them to really think about the essentials. What are the essentials of their faith? And there's sort of a written statement of faith that many churches have. There's also an unwritten statement of faith or set of beliefs and values that churches have that are often very unexamined. And one of the things that I love to ask the pastors that I interviewed was, have you actually examined both your written documents and what they say about some of the issues related to science and faith? But have you also taken time to reflect and examine some of those nonverbal things that your congregation conveys? I've found that sometimes those nonverbal things are more important, perhaps, than some of the explicitly written things. I got an email from one scientist who is a medical researcher who said that they had stopped going to church because the gist of it was that he was tired of dealing with people who had a different perspective on the age of the earth, evolution, and Adam and Eve, and he was just done. Which is sad that it came to that. That church had nothing in writing. It was not even necessarily a general theme within the whole congregation, but one or two individuals just made that person's life so uncomfortable that they felt that they could no longer attend church. And so it makes you wonder, how can we do, using the old Methodist principles, how can we at least as congregations and churches do no harm to people in the sciences? In other words, be aware enough that we are a welcoming, safe place where people can come and feel that they belong. Because from some of my interviews, there were a lot of scientifically minded people who had found churches where they were done harm to or felt that they were done harm to. It's not just limited to people in the sciences, but there are course, specific issues that relate to that. I have two sons who are scientists, one son who definitely is not. I have one son who's a computer scientist, one who's a mechanical engineer. When they moved to another city, the first two churches they went to, they were made to feel very unwelcome as people who had scientific perspectives on life, the universe, and everything. Which, again, it just breaks your heart, especially as a father who wants their kids to be involved. Thankfully, they did find one that at least did no harm. The question then is, can we actually do good? Are there ways in which churches and scientists can actually get along really, really well? And I'm hopeful that there are. I think that one of the things that one scientist said is, wouldn't it be cool if when a person begins their career in the sciences, people in the church commissioned them and called them up to the front of the church and laid hands on them and prayed for them as they began their new job and their new career. Wouldn't that be cool? So since I heard that a couple of years ago, we've had one person begin attending our church who is actually a professor of education, and we did that. So it wasn't a scientist, but we just thought, wouldn't it be cool if, you know, we commissioned people to religious vocations? What if we commissioned people to other vocations, including the sciences, and recognized that that was not just legitimate, but an exceptional way that people could actually serve and praise God? One of the things that we have tried to do in our congregation is encourage some of our scientists to be actively involved and share what they do. So we have the chemistry professor who we regularly call upon for children's stories because they're so cool. But we also have ways where in our daily vacation Bible school, we do science-themed things more often than anything else because kids think they're cool and fun. And why not? It's a great way to build connections with them. Part of it is we've tried to also find ways that the people who are in our church or in the sciences to get them teaching, talking, et cetera, about their research and being able to normalize it. Because most pastors I've discovered do not have scientific backgrounds. They are either Bible school grads or have humanities and liberal arts backgrounds. And so realistically then when those of us who are ministers preach, we tend to preach from our background. So I naturally, being a geographer, talk all about creation, and we do cool services where we read Psalms and we look at nice pictures of the latest hike in the mountains and all those wonderful things. I thought that was normal, but apparently it's not. And so to find ways to have people in the sciences fill in that gap and introduce some of those things adds a lot of vitality. And that leads to the third point in Methodism, where you attend upon all the ordinances of God, which is about worship and being a community. And so the question for churches is, how can we be that kind of community that encourages and welcomes people who are in all various disciplines and backgrounds and experiences, not just ones that perhaps are just like us? One of the things that I heard repeatedly, especially from the academics, was just how busy they are, what kind of pressure they're under, and how their family and personal life suffers because they feel so much pressure to perform in their occupations. And so it's not just true of people in the sciences, but it raises issues for how can churches be places where we can support and encourage people and not necessarily demand more of them, and certainly not discourage them in any meaningful way. I think one of the other possibilities is just the idea of building bridges to, first of all, to scientists with faith. So how can we as a church be a welcoming, safe place, but also to those in the sciences who don't have faith? One of the things that I work with my geography students, who are mostly in Christian colleges, is that the idea of geography, of everything from landforms to creation care to et cetera, are things that are important to everyone in our culture. People like the world around us, they're interested. And how can we use that to build bridges to invite people into Christian community as well? One of the things that I came through loud and clear is how can we mentor and encourage younger people so that they don't grow up with some of the issues that we inherited in our generation? I actually didn't grow up in the church. I never knew there was an issue between science and faith until I had been a pastor for 5 years, and all of a sudden it hit me like a ton of bricks, which was interesting. And maybe it was also related to moving to Alberta, but that's a whole nother issue that I won't necessarily get into. But one of the things that I've found really interesting is the whole idea of not ignoring or avoiding science in church. And bring up scientific talks, have honest conversations about it, because it is a live part of people's experience and interest. So normalize it and make it part of the experience. Make science part of the story, and I capitalize story. In other words, you know, including some of drawing attention to the fact that God's creation, I've encouraged my students and people in my church to use the term God's creation when it's appropriate to do so, because you look at the world differently when you see it as God's creation than as if you see it as the environment or Mother Nature or the world. When you begin to talk and think about the created world around us as God's creation, you value it and you see it differently. So making that part of our discussion. Developing a theology of creation, and leading to the fourth one, the ethics of caring for creation. Young adults in particular are very aware of the environmental issues and challenges that we're facing. My kids are, even my one son who is not a scientist. He's a historian of Central Asia. Go figure. I don't know how that happened. But he's very aware of the environmental challenges around us. And to talk about that in the church in terms of a Christian context and the Christian ethic of the care of creation enables students and young adults to connect what they're learning and experiencing in the non-church world with their growing, hopefully emerging theology as Christians. And so for us to be able to give them some biblical and theological framework for that kind of care is very helpful. Talking honestly about tough issues, this is one of those things they know. My kids know that there are issues around evolution, around the age of the earth, around Adam and Eve, around ethical issues from abortion to LGBTQ things. To be able to have honest discussions around those rather than to avoid them has been, the churches that do that seem to be much healthier and much more able to roll with some of the challenges that the young adults are facing. Finding mentors, one of the things that a couple of churches have done in other areas, but not specifically in the sciences, is when they know that a student is going into education, they'll try to find an experienced teacher to mentor that person and help them develop as a Christian teacher. One of the things I've pushed back on is when you have a young adult in your congregation who is interested in the sciences, can you find a mature Christian who is a scientist to be a mentor and to help them navigate those waters, because they can be just as challenging. And the final thing, and this is my final point, is simply to be creative. We have an art class that meets in our church on a Thursday morning. It's a group of people, young and old, who happen to be free. So it's a couple of homeschool students right through to a lot of elderly people. It's led by a couple of people who just love art. And so they do a variety of learning how to do watercolor and sketching and all those kinds of things. This is Cameron Falls in Waterton. Before the fire, it looks a little bit different now, not too much different. But one of the things that you do, I encourage them as the geographer again, is I always encourage them to paint landscapes, because I can't paint people, so why would I want to paint people? But I'd love to paint landscapes. But when you actually encourage someone who isn't necessarily a scientist, but loves art, to paint something or be creative, you have to learn the science. Because in order to paint a waterfall, you actually have to understand the geology and the geography and the processes that create a waterfall. And so one of the ways that I've subversively been trying to encourage people in my congregation to learn science is to be creative and to do some crazy things like paint, because when you paint, you have to learn science, sort of. So On that point, I'm going to end. And if there's any questions, I'm happy to entertain them.
Thank you. Question over here first. And I might add, thank you, Bruce. The expression sometimes goes, for me, that was worth the whole registration fee of the conference itself. So thank you.
I'll be quick so Jack can ask his question. You know, one thing that you didn't include in your list of advice for churches that I think is essential, and that is, I'm from the Bible Belt area of United States, down in Texas, and one of the things that I have found from personal experience is that as a scientist who believes in an older Earth and accept a Big Bang origin of the universe and evolutionary development, that I am a threat. I am a threat to certain people in the church. I am, just by holding that view. So what I would think that you need to include in your list of advice here is that is for church members to learn to separate core essential doctrines of the faith from peripheral ones, and recognize that the age of the earth, or how God chose to create, or what process he might have used, are peripheral. Those are peripheral doctrines, and you have to make a distinction between core central doctrines of the faith and peripheral ones. Yeah. What would you say?
Yeah, I skipped over that. That was sort of under the defining the essentials bit. I agree absolutely, and that's where I think that there's both an official set sometimes and an unofficial set, and it's that unofficial, unexamined one that often comes to the fore. One of the churches, the second largest evangelical church in our city, was recently calling a pastor and had a wonderful candidate. That person failed the age of the earth test, which is written down nowhere. But for a couple of the people on the search committee, that was a definitive question that determined whether or not the person, who was incredibly gifted in every other way, would probably never, ever preach a sermon on anything to do with the age of the earth. But because they didn't hold to a particular perspective, was not considered to be an acceptable candidate. So one of the challenges, I think, for churches, and this came out with the four individuals who actively discouraged students from going into the sciences, when you press, do you have anyone who is a scientist in your church? There was this blank look like, well, of course not. Well, where do the scientists go? You know, if they're not welcome. And that's where, being a safe, Methodist idea of at least doing no harm. If you can't actively do good, at least don't actively discourage or do harm comes into play.
Another question here.
Thank you for your presentation. I would love to have you as my pastor. More because you are sensitive to the kind of issues that people that practice science have in the church. The experience in one particular point, I really resonated. Why can't we more bless people as they choose an occupation? I find actually any kind of opportunity for me to express myself as a science is somewhat discouraged within the congregation, more because not, or shall we say, less because that I might say something wrong, because I'm a chemist and I don't usually deal with the evolutionary things as much, but more because they don't want to see me stand out as anything special. So in other words, if we're going to bless occupations like those that practice science, we should be blessing those that drive trucks and a variety of things like that. So we would have to expand this whole thing to bless many occupations. You know, thoughts on that? Otherwise, but I think you have some wonderful ideas there.
It's an interesting one to think about. My son just graduated from mechanical engineering at U of Alberta. They have a thing called the Iron Ring Ceremony for engineers, which was written actually by the fellow who wrote the Jungle Book, Rudyard Kipling. it's basically cultic. I mean, it's you're listing up this chain and you're making all these vows and swearing all these things. But on the other hand, it gives a powerful sense of, my engineer sitting in the back there, a powerful sense of identity and professional. It's a way of basically the older engineers blessing and welcoming the younger ones. And there is a sense of can't we do that more with other occupations? And I think it's something that as a congregation, each congregation needs to think through that a little bit. But yeah.
We have a number of questions. So as moderator, I'm going to ask the questioners to keep your questions as short as possible and ensure that they are questions. And we'll try and work everybody in.
What can scientists show people in the church? I volunteer at the Royal Ontario Museum in Toronto, which is like a palace of evolution. And I've invited young intern pastor students to visit. And I found it helpful to show them a little bit behind the scenes, things like the details of geology of meteorites, which is kind of a non-threatening subject, but it sort of hints at the old Earth.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Yeah, I think it, and, you know, and be kind to your pastors too, speaking as a pastor, that, I mean, I do have enough scientific background that I can roll with some of this, but recognizing that for many pastors, there's a huge learning curve when it comes to not many people with a scientific background necessarily are drawn isn't the right word because we often talk of ministry as a calling, but end up in pastoral work. And so in the best sense of the word ignorance, most pastors are just not aware of much of the scientific world and the scientific mindset, which creates some tension and threat and challenges. We're always afraid of that which we don't know.
Hey, another question here?
Yeah, my question relates right to that. You know, we're afraid of what we don't know. People are intimidated by scientists. So how do we get them to be, how do we get the rest of the congregation to not see the scientists as these scary people?
I think that's the interesting thing is that, you know, the most scientists, when I asked who did have really healthy church connections, it was through a small group, it was through relationships. And I mean, it's a tired thing for pastors to say that, but it's true that when you get to know someone to some extent, then it becomes about them as a person. And their occupation, their calling, their vocation is secondary. And I think it's really through building those relationships. And I would say, you know, if possible, be part of a small group that isn't all other scientists so that you can, you know, and then they can be your advocates as well.
Okay, another question here. As a young person and someone who's recently finished their undergrad but has found it incredibly lonely over a long time, I think that everything that you were saying is exactly touching on things that I've felt, but what advice would you give to someone who's a young person in science who maybe has searched their congregation for someone to mentor them and help them and pray with them, but no one has either come forward or been approachable? I find finding a mentor very difficult because I feel like a lot of people who are maybe a bit older often either don't have time or doing their own research or just aren't there. They're not available. Mm-hmm. What advice would you give to someone in that situation?
Well, the theory sounds better than the practice, doesn't it? I think it's true, not just in the sciences, but in general, I've found that trying to find mentors for people is very difficult. However, you know, I would encourage you to persist and at least find a group of peers if you can, who can be supportive to you. You know, if sort of people of like mind, I really should be speaking to a group of pastors, not a group of scientists, because again, you're the converted, but loneliness was one of the big issues that came across. And I think it's true of academics in general, that there tend to be very lonely people, which is unfortunate.
Another question here?
Yeah, thank you very much. And it's really just a further comment. It seems that all these insights really need to be taken back to seminary education, go to the source.
Yeah, I have done a presentation like this with at Acadia Divinity College, which is my alma mater. But yeah, it's really, I'm waiting for the invitation to do it at my denominational pastors conference. They haven't invited me yet.
Okay. And just to comment also in terms of the CSA and our interest in developing local chapters, which helps to fill some of the gaps that may occur just between members in the congregation, but creating a support group that really does address both these issues.
Yeah, and I think that is one of the helpful things with the CSCA is that it can provide at least some connections in a periodic, someone referred to the diaspora, I think yesterday, that it's nice to come together and kind of have some like-minded people.
I was just going to say, I hope, what's your name, by the way?
Sarah.
That you'll be surrounded by people from here saying, we can help you one way or another.
Yeah.
So I have a question or from the States, big non-denominational churches, the thousands kinds of churches where science is really a taboo word, 40 years of those kinds of churches. Can you write something? Can you put something in Christianity Today? Can you put something together that we can access, that we can pass around to pastors? We need you to do this in ways that we can spread.
I think,
even an online video, if you can make a YouTube of a talk, I think these things are needed.
Okay. I think BioLogos and a couple of other organizations do some of that. Because this was a research project with a grant, all of this information is on a website that I created down at the bottom, scientistsandcongregations.ca. So it's a text form. There's not fancy videos and all of that, but, this material is all available there. If I had more time and money and funding, I'd love to do a whole lot more, but the advantage of a website is you can keep adding to it. So as I speak to more people, I add a couple more anecdotes and that kind of thing. There also are a couple of pages on there of books and other resources that might be available. That might be a helpful starting point.
Agreed. Thanks very much for your talk. I'm more on the pastoral side here. I'm not a scientist. I'm also going to break your rule because I don't have a question. But I thought this was important to tell people. Oh, I have the mic anyway, so it's game over.
Give pastor the three mic things. In trouble.
Okay, three things maybe to mention quickly. I have a friend Josh, and he's in the States. And what he does is he goes and speaks to different seminaries. He's a scientist, and so this can be done. I think he does the work through the ASA, something potentially that the CSCA can look at. Number two, I'm here as part of a funding granting that we did out of Fuller. And they have developed something called plpit.com, pulpit. And what it is it's a scientific digest made for pastors. So plpit.com, you can get your pastors to sign up for this and they'll get like a scientific digest every day or whatever it is, things that they can be reading up on and be learning. And the last thing on commissioning, so I'm part of a local church here in Vancouver. One of the things we do is we commission somebody every Sunday. So we have a member of our church come up. We ask them three questions. Who are you? Tell us a little bit about your backstory, and then how can we pray for you and commission you? And we do it every Sunday. So I think if you focus just maybe on scientists, you'll miss a lot of other people. We just have a very diverse community. This is a way of getting to know people, but also just praying for them, whatever it is that they're doing. So just some practical ideas. Maybe you can take some of those.
That's awesome. That's probably
Thank
a good place
Thank you for
to
breaking
end.
The rules. Anything else? Yeah, Richard.
The name of your website is very similar to a UK organization that does this. Are you connected to them?
Yeah, it's the Templeton Foundation funded one in the States called scientistsandcongregations.com at one point, but then it was a short-term funding. Then Scotland got it, then England has it. Okay. So yes, I know the people in England very well.
You know Andrew Torrance.
Torrance. Okay. And
I was thinking you should get me connected with that.
Yeah. One of the best resources actually is the Faraday Institute at Cambridge University has some great resources as well that are relatively pastor-friendly if you want to encourage. And they have tons of videos and you may be familiar with them. But I did a sabbatical with the folks there in Cambridge, and they were very influential in sort of how my research developed and emerged. So thank you. Yeah.
Gene, as I take the microphone over to Gene for maybe one final question, I'm just going to share one more story. The CSCA, for this conference, in their working with students, because we have seven students here on CSCA scholarships. And through that process and vetting them, we encountered one story of a student who had applied to be a youth leader and got an interview, but then through checking on the web, it was encountered that this student had attended a BioLogos conference, and that was it. No, like, anyway.
Thank you for this presentation. I won't let you and other people know who are pastors. I'm here because my pastor, Jen, right up there, that's Bob's daughter, found out quite recently something she hadn't realized. She doesn't come from a scientific background herself, and she had not previously realized how many members of her congregation are suffering from this much lauded dichotomy. You know, they struggle with science versus whatever it is that's versus. And she was shocked. She was deeply shocked. Well, because she's Bob's daughter, she found out about this event, and that's why she's here, because she wants to help those people. And I wonder how many pastors anywhere, many of you are in pastoral organizations, I wonder how many of those pastors in your organizations are aware that they've got people in their congregation who are suffering from this because, gee.
Yeah. I agree. And that was part of what came out in my interviews.
I was delighted with this. This has been a great presentation.
Yeah. It's interesting because actually Elaine Howard Eklund's research in the States, her stats are all American. 46% of the general U.S. population says they go to church. Only 18% of scientists do. But that is actually almost double those in the humanities and the social sciences, which is interesting. So when you look at, for instance, I'm in a university town. We do have a substantial number of scientists involved in my congregation, but the rate of participation is probably half of that for people in other disciplines on the university campus, which means that if we're looking at a mission field, it's huge for all people in academia, because the rate of belief in general and church attendance in particular. Well, that was 18% was belief, not, she didn't have any stats for church attendance among scientists, but 18% with faith, which I would say is probably, if you'd just about half it for Canada, it's probably less than 10%.
Well, thanks once again. Let's show our appreciation to Bruce.